We have a serious isolationist problem with our senior citizen population, and we could solve it single-handedly by pairing people together just by basic conversation, because our younger generations have so much that can be learned from seniors, and they're witty and they're full of life, and their life is far from done. Far from done. I have people on hospice that were funnier and were maybe within 6 weeks of their life ending than I've met in people that are in their 20s. I'd rather hang out with the hospice resident than I would someone who was in my 20s, because they're just full of life. And we're missing out big time on that. And so that's why I love senior living, because we think we have all these preconceived notions of what it is, and we don't do the industry justice.
Welcome to another episode of Innovation Insights, where we dive deep into the minds shaping the future of industries through innovation, creativity, and groundbreaking research. We believe that innovation happens in all aspects of life. I'm your host, Dr. Yolanda Sanders. Today, we are joined by Dr. Melinda Schultheis, a seasoned healthcare administrator and an emerging force in healthcare education. With a career spanning over a decade in long-term care management, Melinda has transitioned her extensive experience into a catalyst for nurturing future healthcare leaders. Early in her career, Melinda never envisioned working in long-term care, yet she found herself at the helm of various skilled nursing facilities and continuing care retirement communities in both nonprofit and for-profit sectors. Despite the challenges that intensified over the years, her role as an administrator shaped her understanding of the profound impact and influence she could wield. In 2024, Melinda took a pivotal step back from healthcare leadership to focus on academia, taking on roles as an assistant teaching professor at Iowa State University, a professor at Barcelona Executive Business School, and an instructor at Grandview University. She also serves as an adjunct professor at Des Moines Area Community College. Melinda holds a doctorate in health sciences from the Massachusetts College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences, a master's in public administration from Drake University, and a bachelor of science in journalism from Iowa State University. Through her consultancy, MS Healthcare Consulting, Melinda combines real-world experience with compassion and empathy, dedicated to making a difference in the lives of emerging healthcare professionals. Her mission is driven by a commitment to authentic connection and helping others along their growth pathway. Join us as we delve into her transformative journey and explore her visionary approach to healthcare education and leadership. Melinda, welcome to the Innovation Insights podcast.
Hello.
So happy to have you here.
Thank you. I'm just happy to be here. I'm honored.
Well, we both work at the same university for our day jobs, but we've never met in person, and we've communicated back and forth via email and LinkedIn messages over the last year. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really just excited to have you here and on the podcast.
Yes. What started as a budding LinkedIn relationship has now turned into this beautiful podcast episode.
It has. It's really funny because LinkedIn has really, I've been able to connect with quite a few of our guests and mm-hmm. meet people. And so, but I'm just thrilled to have you here. Your area of work is of interest personally and professionally to me. I said personally and professionally. Healthcare is so important, and your area of focus with senior living and your work in that area is commendable. As I mentioned to you, I have my roommate is 81 years old. She's my mother.
I can't think of a better roommate.
Oh my gosh, I can't either. You know, we both tolerate each other a lot.
Sometimes that's all you can do in a day, and that's okay.
Well, tell me, let's just start with your background. Yeah, how did this become of interest to you?
To be honest, it was accidental. And I don't say that lightly. It was honestly an accident. We had gotten transferred to a very remote part of Iowa for my husband's job, and I had just found out the week prior that I had gotten into the master's program at Drake. Of course, it was 4 hours away where we were moving, and I had to travel back and forth every week to go to school. While I was up in that rural part of Iowa, I was pretty lonely, as you can imagine, and I wanted a part-time job. So I got a part-time job working in the dietary department in a nursing home. And I will never forget walking in my first day. I was absolutely petrified. I mean, it was every bit as intimidating as you would expect it to be. By the end of my shift, I fell in love with almost half the residents, knew their names. Some of them were speaking different languages to me. I studied German in undergrad at Iowa State, so I found a resident that was speaking German to me, and I couldn't imagine. I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. Believe it or not, going into your master's degree, you think you have some direction, and I didn't. And then I left that day thinking, okay, I don't know what's next, but I know it's this industry. And about a week later, the administrator, who I didn't even know what that position was, had no idea what that was. She pulled me aside and said, you know, I know you're studying healthcare administration at Drake. What are you going to do? I said, I have no idea. Probably a hospital, because that's the stereotypical thought that everyone goes into. Hospital or clinic. She's like, well, you could do my job. I'm like, I don't even know what you do. Fast forward a year and a half later, after having worked there, and she really kind of integrated me into the clinical side of it, the administrative side of it, because it's all encompassing in that role. I mean, you have to understand plant operations, housekeeping, laundry, dietary, you know, be able to understand a balance sheet. And you don't know that going into it. But then you also can't imagine not doing it. So when I graduated from Drake, I went and I got hired by Care Initiatives as a nursing home administrator. At the same time, I had my daughter. So that was very interesting. I had a newborn baby and was studying for my licensing exam for this role. And it was all accidental. Had I not gotten that temp job, I don't know that I would have stumbled into it. And then I've done it for the last 10 years. And so when we transferred down to Des Moines, I like to call it the big leagues, because I went from a very small 40-bed or 49-bed nursing home in rural Iowa to what's called a continuing care retirement community with hundreds of residents, ranging from independent living to fully long-term care. And it was only private pay. And I was in my mid-20s and had no, I was so in over my head. But still, put in the hours, loved it. And so I just, and then it kind of got me to here. And then I started to understand the staffing issues that occurred. And that's where my heart really, I really connected well with the residents, but the staff is where my heartstrings were getting pulled. And then that's how I segued into academia, because I thought, how am I going to better prepare this upcoming generation for this healthcare experience? Because no matter whether a person has any experience at all in senior living or not, it's going to impact you in some facet of your life, whether it's you yourself when you get to that point, a parent, a grandparent. So senior living is one facet of healthcare that most people don't want to talk about, but it is going to impact all of us at some point. And we need to help prepare the next generation for what that looks like. So that's my background on how I ended up here.
Oh, what a great story of how you think you're going on one direction, and then just by coincidence, this one interaction makes a big change.
Yes.
You mentioned in this the staffing challenges. What are some of those staffing challenges?
You know, it doesn't matter what position we're talking about. You know, everyone hears on a global spectrum the healthcare or the clinical shortage. And of course that exists. But we're talking dietary, we're talking plant operations, we're talking housekeeping and laundry. So it's so much more than just nurses and CNAs. And the difficult reality of long-term care especially, and this can segue into all of healthcare if we're really, you know, being honest with ourselves, but we don't have a shortage of healthcare personnel. We don't manage our environments well to want to keep people. And so that's where it really became telling. You know, I worked for three companies in my 10 years. Some were non-for-profit, some were for-profit, some were huge, some were small. Regardless of where you go, the issues are the same, just on a different scale. And it became very apparent to me how we are not doing the basics very well, especially in leadership roles. And so that's why I realized early on, if I was going to survive in this career, it was no longer, it wasn't thrive at the beginning, it was survive. I was going to have to figure out how to master dealing with turnover and keeping employees engaged and wanting to stay with us. So staffing is a huge issue, but so far beyond clinical. But how we approach getting people to stay, it doesn't matter which department we're talking about. We're dealing with the people. And so we have to figure out as leaders how to deal in the business of people. Otherwise, you aren't going to survive in healthcare. You know, it's not just the patients. It's the staff that contribute to the quality patient care. And people don't understand that fragile relationship. That's a very fragile ecosystem that all has to work together, because you can't have quality resident care without taking care of your staff first and foremost. So it has to start there.
Oh, I so agree. And, you know, part of our connection and with, you know, when we connected probably about a year ago, was the hospitality. I had been involved with an academic program that had hospitality management and senior living care, and many of the challenges staffing-wise is similar in hospitality.
Absolutely.
Restaurants, hotels.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we had talked about that and, yeah, that care part. And one thing when we discussed during our prep meeting was the active and compassionate listening. And mm-hmm. it seems like that, you know, it's an important tool to be, or skill to have.
Yes.
To both as a leader within an organization, but also working with the clientele.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Tell us your approach to active listening and compassionate listening.
Yeah. So when I left healthcare actively, I still consult, but it's not the same as being actively in that world anymore. So when I left a little over a year ago, I was lost and I was burned out. And I'm going to call myself a survivor at that point, because I crawled out of healthcare, but it still held my heart in a vice and I didn't know what to do with it. So I took a course at Grandview on active and compassionate listening, and it was really geared towards, you know, people that were interested in consulting. And what happened was I accidentally fell in love with the material and realized that this is everything that has been missing in healthcare and many other industries that you just mentioned too. I mean, restaurants, hospitality management has a lot of parallels with senior living. Oftentimes we're trained, you know, that one of the communities I worked at, we took on the Ritz-Carlton motto mindset for customer service, because there's so many parallels between hospitality management and senior living. But I realized, you know, what I had been doing this whole time with my team was active and compassionate listening. I just didn't have, you know, the wheelhouse or the know-how to connect the pieces together. But, you know, active listening is just being engaged in a conversation. And believe it or not, it is very difficult to stop your brain from preparing the next question in a conversation. It's an active, difficult challenge to learn to stop yourself from doing. And oftentimes we're not great at listening to understand. Listening is a choice, and we oftentimes just hear. We don't actually listen. And so that's where the key is here, is you have to train yourself to stop preparing what you're going to say next. Stop focusing on, you know, the external factors around you, that, you know, what environment you're in, what person you could get sidetracked, when you have to focus on the person that you're talking with. And then the compassionate listening piece is actually caring enough to hear that person's story within their story. We don't listen with judgment. We're not trying to solve their problem. We are just actively listening with a compassionate, open heart. And that is what this program at Grandview taught me. And it just gave meaning to what I had been doing this whole time with my team. And so this is necessary in long-term care, because you're never going to get staff to want to stay if you don't figure out how to actively and compassionately listen, which sounds so basic, but it's difficult at first to master the skill set. But once you do, it just inherently becomes part of every conversation you have, whether it be with a staff member, a resident, family member, it doesn't matter. It just becomes kind of accidentally who you are once you get the practice down. So that's kind of how, you know, active and compassionate listening all came about, was the realization that what the industry was missing and what we had accidentally been doing this whole time. And, you know, this curriculum at Grandview just kind of put a bow on it and tied it together, and it all made sense to me. And then I realized this is what I think I'm meant to do with my healthcare 2.0 career. I couldn't leave it fully, but I didn't know what that looked like for me. And I knew turnover was so high. I thought, what did I do that was so great? And it, you know, maybe it isn't so great. It should just be the standard, but it's not the standard everywhere. And so I thought, how do I bring this to healthcare? And that's really what brought me to consulting and senior living to teach these basic practices.
Oh, so lovely. And, you know, I have a couple of takeaways from that. I love when you said listening is a choice.
Yeah.
Listening is a choice.
Mm-hmm. And even, you know, the beauty of it is too, even though I'm in academia now predominantly, I do it even with the students. And they have responded in such, you know, hopefully I'm a good professor. I hope I am. I hope they're getting something out of my courses when they leave. But I think my student evaluations are on the more positive end because I accidentally actively listen and compassionately listen. And some of these students don't have that. And so you become that support person just inadvertently. And so it can permeate into your personal relationships as well, which is what I have found to be pretty telling too. You know, with my husband and daughter, I'm accidentally doing the practice itself, but I'm still choosing. It's now become habitual, but I'm choosing to listen rather than just to hear.
Well, I bet you're probably more than accidentally doing it. It sounds like it's pretty inherent in who you are.
It's become that inadvertently. Yes. That would be one key that I think healthcare leaders need to understand is the necessity of emotional intelligence and understanding people of all walks of life, all demographics, all cultures, all genders. It doesn't matter, but you have to if you're going to survive in healthcare. And if you're going to transition from surviving even to thriving, you're going to have to figure out how to master working effectively with people and seeing them for their individual, you know, traits. And that will help to reduce turnover almost immediately.
Well, that makes sense. And, you know, also, you know, relates to what you were saying about understanding and on the compassionate side, understanding the story. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I think we hear the story, but I don't know if we move to the point of understanding, like, oh, I hear that you are, you have this challenge and this and this and this. I hear it. But do we understand it?
Yeah, exactly. You process it, but did you really listen to what they said? Because generally speaking, when someone's talking, there is an extra step to the story, an extra level of depth. And we have to be able to pick up on that as healthcare leaders in order to be effective for our teams. It's just simple. We have to figure out how to do that in order to give good patient care and to take care of our staff. Because we can't take care of the residents if we're pouring from an empty cup. Honestly, we can't.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, that makes absolute sense. Well, and still along those lines of understanding the story, what are some techniques? I mean, is it asking more questions? Is it doing some more research on your own? Or, I mean, just, you know, how do you do that?
So the IDEA methodology is so basic. It's almost crippling how basic it is, but it's sometimes difficult to get into the habit of doing. The reality is most people are grappling with some sense of, like, who am I? why am I here and what am I supposed to do that matters. Most people are struggling with that, no matter where you're at on your journey of healthcare. Even patients are struggling with that. Our residents were struggling with those matters. So when we teach the IDEA methodology, you know, the goal is it's a structure for helping people through the path of discovery learning. So what I had said earlier is, you know, when we're compassionately and actively listening, we don't solve the problems for people. You know, the IDEA methodology is just, you have a quick intro. So, hey, hello, how you doing? Then you have a discovery question. You know, the person will pretty much tell you from that response of, hey, hello, how are you doing? The conversation accidentally will segue from there into whatever direction they want it to go. You know, I had a great day at work, or no, today was rough. Then you kind of ask more in-depth questions and they will inadvertently spill. And this is where the part comes of hearing the story within the story, because most people will tell you what it is that they're wanting to say if you're really listening. The thing that's really telling about the IDEA methodology, though, is the very last part. That's the A, that's the accountability piece. Because most people are seeking some form of a solution to their problem, but the person listening oftentimes can't, you know, have that solution for you. But you can ask certain questions to help guide the person to want to take actionable steps. So one of the things that they had taught us to do during this program was, you know, we would ask end questions like, you know, are you prepared to do X, Y, and Z? Or are you prepared to maybe, you know, tackle this problem you're dealing with? And what would that look like? And so people can break down and kind of solve their own problems through this basic conversation method. And it's not difficult, but you have to be able to listen and then empower people to solve some of their own problems. And so this methodology really helps as a leader, because it helps. You can do this with residents. You can do this with staff. It can work on students. I mean, it can really help any facet of an industry, to be honest.
So let's go over the steps again. So I is for
intro. So, hey, how are you doing? D, a discovery question. So here's a basic process that we follow when we're doing the IDEA methodology. We generally pair people up for 5 minutes. One's the listener and one is the talker. And then they'll switch roles after 5 minutes. So we ask people to say, hey, how you doing? What's your favorite book, movie, or restaurant? So that's your D, that's your discovery question. Then people will segue into the explanation, and you would be amazed in 5 minute time what comes out of a conversation. And oftentimes, if you're really pretty savvy, you can even get to the accountability factor from where this conversation goes. So maybe someone chooses movie. Hey, what's your favorite movie? And then they go more in depth about why. And maybe them walking away from the conversation with, I'm going to start seeing more movies more often because this makes me feel, you know, more at peace with myself day to day. And I can, you know, unwind from my work week. So it can be so basic as a basic conversation like that. Sometimes people are not ready for that accountability step, and that's okay. But you've at least helped them to come to the conclusion of what step they should take to solve the problem when they're ready. So any basic conversation can follow this IDEA methodology. And it works great in the workplace. So no matter when you have this big overarching issue or something small, and you know, you may know the answer as the leader, but you're trying to train your team to think critically so that they can have tools and not need you all the time. And that helps to alleviate them always searching for you so you can solve their problems, and you are alleviated, you know, from being burned out as a leader. And so that all kind of ties into the turnover rate, because you don't go home so taxed and they go home feeling empowered. It's kind of a win-win situation.
Oh, that's fabulous. And is the methodology, it can be used or implemented like one-on-one or in like small groups?
Yes.
Or in a group setting too?
Yes, it can be implemented in both. And, you know, with in the long-term care environment, your team is very diverse interdisciplinary wise, but you generally have 8 to 10 different people. And you can easily go through this as a group. And it doesn't have to take 25, 30 minutes. You know, if you have an issue and you want to talk about it as a group, you can find a solution in a matter of a few minutes just by this basic methodology. And it's oftentimes not even, you know, the administrator that's coming up with the idea. It's maybe the plant operations manager who came up with something great that the clinical team can, you know, utilize. So it's shocking what can come out of this. And it's not taxing on all of the leaders, because you empower people to discovery, learn in their own way. And it's really great to watch people come alive. They just come alive through the process.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love the empowerment part of it. And that is one of our values, one of our six values for Innovation Insights is empowerment. Yes. So we'll have to try this out in some different ways too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's always helpful when we're training people how to do this too. We show them a video of what it looks like. Because people, you know, by the time you get to, once you get through the intro and the discovery phase and you get to explanation, sometimes as the listener, it's helpful to summarize, you know, the two or three points that you hear reoccurring so that the person knows you're listening and actively so. And so then they know kind of when you get to that accountability phase, they may not know that they're going to be accountable for something yet, but you as the listener can help guide them to that action. And so when we're training people, we show them a quick video of just a basic conversation, like a family vacation. I think that's what our video is through the training. But the person walks away with an accountability piece after a 5-minute conversation. So it helps for people to see it and then they can practice it. But it really can be quite powerful and empowering.
Yeah. Oh, that makes sense. Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you for sharing that. It's always nice to have some applicable tools or actions that someone can take away.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We've touched a little bit on empathy and patient care. And so being compassionate, I think, is a part of empathy.
100%.
And so how do you, you know, foster that culture of empathy within healthcare?
I'll give you an example because this sounds so basic, but it's not. So, you know, my director of nursing, she was this very strict African woman that put up with no qualms of anyone, but she had the biggest heart and her staff would do anything for her. When I say anything, they would run through a wall for her if she asked them to. She was that powerful what she did. It almost brings tears to my eyes, to be honest. So we had a floor nurse that had a family emergency and she needed to go take care of her son. And our director of nursing would, without a question, you know, step in and relieve her so she could go take care of her family issue. She came back after her family issue to finish her shift because she respected our director of nursing so much because she had built that relationship with her. When myself and my director of nursing left, because she left to go be a nurse practitioner the same time I was leaving to go be a professor, those sorts of behaviors didn't continue to occur with the ongoing leadership. And we had heard from some of our staff who had reached out after the fact, you know, you used to help me during personal crises like this. And it didn't even occur to us to not help. That was just the basic humanness in us. It doesn't matter, you know, the titles at that point. Someone has an issue with the family and they need help. And we need to step in and do that. And so empathy really, you know, at the very basic human level of it, we have to be able to respect and recognize when another person just needs help, even if it doesn't have to deal with being job related. And the reason that I know us leading with empathy, and this isn't to say that we didn't also have accountability. I said she was very strict and we were very accountable. Our teams were very accountable, but they also knew we would do anything for them. So, and this is the reason I know that empathy and our compassionate and active listening methods work, because in the middle of the pandemic, you know, her and I were managing our retirement community, and we did not have a staff shortage. We had an overabundance of positions, of applicants. We had to turn RNs away. We had to turn CNAs away. We had to turn cooks away. I mean, we didn't struggle because people heard through the grapevine that the leaders cared. And so the basic empathy piece of it is, you know, when we, if we also tie in the residents to this, if the staff feel cared for as human beings that they should be, then that trickles into positive resident care. The residents are just going to get great care if they feel cared for themselves. And so empathy really just becomes an expectation. And we would talk about that from the second her and I would interview people. And her and I would know almost within 30 seconds if someone had an ounce of empathy in them, because we just wouldn't hire them if they didn't have that, because you can feel it. It's an energy that someone brings off. You know if someone cares or they don't. And so her and I were able to filter through people and create this really beautiful environment of, and when I tell you we had 75-year-old women, 20-year-old males, we had 8 different countries from the Middle East. We had 10 different countries from Africa. I mean, we had people that were from the LGBTQ community. It didn't matter. I mean, we had every facet of diversity and inclusion happening, and we were able to still have this empathetic / highly accountable environment because we just expected it from the CNA all the way up to her in my position. And so it's really important to be able to set that expectation from the beginning in healthcare. We're so worried about filling that space, that empty gap, that spot on the schedule, but filling it with just anyone isn't the key here. And so empathy, it can be, I believe it can be taught. Some people inherently have it. But it can be taught, especially if people know that that's the expectation of the leaders. But the leaders have to have that spirit themselves. And that can be a challenge when you're burned out and you're tired. But you have to remember what you're there for and who you're there to serve. No, senior living is taking care of the most vulnerable population, or one of the most vulnerable populations. These are people that can't advocate for themselves in some cases. Some people don't have family members that come and visit them. We become their family. You know, just on the inverse side of that, you know, oftentimes we would have staff members working doubles. They'd be working 16-hour days, 3-4 days in a row, sending money back home to family and loved ones. And they have children back home that they haven't seen in a year or two's time. And so you have to recognize the empathy stance from that too, you know. These are people just trying to make ends meet for their family. And these are residents just trying to live out the rest of their life with dignity and grace. So we never lost sight of the necessity of empathy, even from, you know, interview beginning to, you know, even the day to day. We still expected empathy even after someone got hired. So it just becomes part of ingrained in your culture from that second you start talking with someone.
Oh, and with what you're saying, that empathy really building upon the compassionate, you know, and understanding the story. So you just gave some examples there of, you know, people's lives outside of work that you had to have an understanding of, which you must have gotten from, you know, conversations, stories.
100%.
Yeah.
I have CNAs bring me back. This is one of my favorite items. She brought it back for my daughter because she knew she loved giraffes. She brought it from Kenya. Another way that we connected empathetically is through food and understanding each other's cultures. So we would have, and we would involve the residents in that. They would eat food. We had them try mandazi and ugali and baklava from, you know, Eastern Europe. I mean, so we just immersed. People have individual souls and spirits that need to be recognized even when we're in the workplace. And the residents loved that. They absolutely loved it. And, you know, oftentimes we had people that you know, English was maybe their third, fourth, or fifth language. And, you know, we didn't chastise them for that. That's something to be embraced. And so we would have them try to teach us phrases from their home language because we're just people trying to do the best we can in a job. And sometimes empathy can be that simple. You know, you may not feel like going to work that day, but all of that team that you have behind you, they need you to be there. And by the time I walked to my office, my sour mood was gone. I mean, you can't not smile at the environment that you've created because everyone is just, everyone's a piece of that puzzle. So it was one of the hardest decisions that I ever had to walk away. But her and I decided, you know, my director of nursing and I decided we're going to go out on top. So that's where, you know, and then we both, you know, entered academia world.
Wow.
I don't know that I could ever have that again because it was so special.
Yeah. Well, it sounds extremely special and that, you know, you put the work in and really built a team. I did want to ask you, so let's say that you inherit a team that maybe is not as empathetic as, you know, you would hope to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you manage that? Because it's different, you know, it's just a little bit different when you can start hiring in.
Yes.
And, but if you have a core group that maybe is not. Mm-hmm.
That's a great question. Because honestly, oftentimes we had a rare situation where her and I started working together where it was exactly what you're saying. And her and I didn't even see eye to eye to begin with, because we didn't understand one another until we started to see, you know, the people for who we were outside of our titles. We had a difficult time getting to this point. And then her and I realized very quickly, you know, some people are going to be a good fit for your environment and others aren't. And that was okay. And, you know, healthcare is so scared to lose someone that we hold on to the wrong people rather than holding out for the better. Or we don't always give people the tools that they need to be successful. And so her and I, you know, really looked at and determined, you know, who could embrace this mindset and this cultural shift that we were trying to create. And others just didn't make it because they self-selected. It just wasn't for them. And that's okay. And so healthcare needs to be okay with also losing people to other opportunities that are a better fit for them or waiting for the right person for that spot. But we get so panicked to fill that gap that that empathy goes out the window. And honestly, if you have a couple of people that are a bad apple on the team, that spreads quickly. And so you have to be mindful as a leader, you know, to try to get people on board. And that's why we started with these conversations from the interview, because we didn't ever want them to come in and think, well, we weren't told this. This wasn't in alignment with who we were as people. But 9 times out of 10, it's very rare that, because her and I, when we left that building where we cleaned it up, you know, we were able to open our own community together so we could handpick who we wanted, which is a very rare experience. But most 9 times out of 10, people inherit a difficult situation. And that's when you have to start to find, you know, who is going to be on board with the empathetic and compassionate listening mindset and who isn't. And sometimes you're going to have some casualties along the way. It's just unavoidable if you're trying to do the right thing for the community. So, but you'd be amazed how some people, once they let their guard down and know that they're going to be supported as not only a staff member, but as a human being, you'd be amazed how many people open up. Amazed.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, what such great advice for people in healthcare, but I would feel like any leadership.
Yeah, absolutely.
Too.
Yeah. And that's the thing about this is, and that I really liked, is it could go into any industry. These are mindsets that, you know, there's staff shortages in almost every industry at this point. But most people are looking to feel valued in their workplace. So the best thing we can do as leaders is figure out what that looks like. And that's not going away. You know, especially the younger generations, they're going to demand that. And so we're seeing more of that now. And good for them. Because I, you know, my parents didn't. They didn't. They stayed. My dad's still at the same job he has had for the last 25 years. And that's okay. But, you know, these younger generations really want to have that empathetic piece and feel invested in and know that there's room for growth. And so we have to start to give that to them as leaders. We have to figure out what that looks like.
I agree. I so agree. It is fabulous to see how the younger generations are. Yeah. They're doing it differently.
Yeah.
They're demanding.
They're advocating for themselves and their peers.
Yeah. And they're demanding to have a good culture to work in and have balance. And,
yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And that's not too much to ask. And even in healthcare,
no.
You can achieve that. You don't have to live at your workplace in healthcare to still feel a balance. And
right.
I think so many people are scared of healthcare for that reason, because they think, well, I don't want to just live at my job. You know, I don't want to be there 70, 80 hours a week. But with these basic principles, you know, if we can get away from behind our desks and stop worrying so much about the paperwork and the administrative tasks that are always going to be there, don't get me wrong, that stuff has to still get completed. But if we can't figure out how to get to the basic core of these elements, you're never going to get ahead, and you're never going to keep people, and you're never going to have, you know, a fully happy team, which is you're like treading water. You never stop treading water. You never get to just free swim and be. You're just constantly trying to stay afloat.
Oh, free swimming and being. Oh, sounds nice.
Yeah. Blissful, right?
It is. It is. Well, what do you see as the future of healthcare leadership? You know, what's down the road? Not that you have a crystal ball, but, you know, but if you did.
I see that people are going to have to learn how to be more people-centric and emotionally intelligent. Healthcare is so much more about the statistics and the data. And don't get me wrong, those are all elements that matter. But patients are demanding, you know, providers and clinical staff that are engaged and patients want to be heard, staff want to be heard. So emotional intelligence, we're going to have to slow down a little bit and actually go back to the fundamental basics and listen to people, because we are so busy as healthcare providers throughout your day. We lose sight of the real reason that we're actually there. And so, you know, we have to figure out, you know, how to master the art of communication. With patients, with family members, with our peers, you know, we have to understand how to create these healthy, psychologically safe workplaces. And I strongly believe that the younger generations and the upcoming healthcare providers, they'll stay, they'll come, they'll join the industry if they know that it's a place that they can be taken care of. But we now, as current healthcare leaders, have to start creating those psychologically safe environments for people to actually want to stay and be part of it. And so we have to also prioritize the well-being of ourselves. We don't do very good at that. And so we have to figure out how to start creating healthier boundaries. But it starts with these basics. You know, if we start doing some of these basics, things start to fall into place a little bit. And some of your staffing issues start to solve themselves inadvertently if you start just investing in them a little bit. This doesn't have to be this long, drawn-out process. These little tweaks every day can make a huge difference. So that's where I foresee healthcare. I think healthcare is going to demand empathy and compassion and emotionally intelligent leaders in order to survive. Because what we're doing is not working very well.
Wow. And it seems to be across so many industries.
Yeah.
I know we're talking about healthcare, but yeah, again, what you have presented in this conversation are really those soft skills.
Yes.
That are important.
Yes.
For every industry, just people and just be nice.
Yes. 100%. I heard it the other day, and it's so, again, so basic. Soft skills are no longer soft. They are necessary, but we overlook them. We don't prioritize them because we're so busy doing the other stuff, but the soft skills are what are going to save you and your team. and no matter the industry. So we have to start reprioritizing that because we have taken them for granted and or lost those soft skills. And so really it's taking it back to the basics.
Well, and, you know, one thing you said earlier, too, is about, you know, building that culture within the organization. And I also like how you said, you know, we set the standard that empathy, you know, and so I know there's a lot of grassroots, you know, things mm-hmm. that happen. I do feel that the leadership needs to, you know, have it together because it just
yes.
impacts
yes.
that culture. I don't like the word toxic, but you hear it all, you know, toxic.
It is. In healthcare, toxic environments are thrown, that phrase is thrown around a lot. And the reality is, you know, whether you're looking at the top down, bottom up, you know, organizational structure, it doesn't matter because everyone from the top down and the bottom up have to be on the same page with how they're going to approach resident care and prioritizing peers and people's sense of well-being. So it doesn't matter anymore that hierarchical, you know, the leaders are doing it and the bottom team isn't. And, you know, leaders have to realize, you know, we wouldn't be in leadership roles if it wasn't for our direct care teams. I mean, I'm really pretty useless in the healthcare setting if I don't have all of my CNAs show up to work. I'm pretty useless if I don't have my cooks come. Like, I can't do my job if I don't have those people to help me do my job. So we're all on this puzzle piece. We're all puzzle pieces together. But yeah, it's the soft skills is where it's at. I feel like that is where many industries are going. If I could foresee it in a crystal ball, people are having to refigure out and reprioritize this.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for that advice and, you know, that forecast. What advice would you give to future or new leaders and then also students that are, you know, thinking about entering into the field of long-term care?
Mm-hmm. I always talk to the students, and this kind of goes along the innovation mindset too. You know, it's one thing for us to sit in class and talk, but it's another thing to act and do. You know, our thoughts are only as good as us actually acting on them. Otherwise, then they're just a thought. And so, you know, as whether you're an aspiring healthcare provider or whatever industry you're wanting to enter into, action is key in all of this. And, you know, we can sit and try to plan and prioritize what we think we want to do, but we need to be better and do better every day. It's so simple. And we need to prioritize effective communication and listening because people will honestly tell you what it is that they need. And we just have that will help us to be able to help them. And, you know, I was covering a healthcare class the last few weeks and it was super exciting. You know, I teach entrepreneurship, but I got to step in and cover some healthcare classes. And it was so exciting to be able to tell them, you know, all of these case studies that we're doing in class, these are real things you get to go do. You get to go solve these staffing crises. You're saying matters, you know, immediately matters. You may think you're just an intern, just a doesn't exist. You have power to help make changes now, but you have to actually act on these thoughts and, you know, these initiatives that you want to follow through with in order to change and make the healthcare industry better. We can't sit back on our heels anymore. We have to act. And so really it's so simple. We have got to transition from we're going to sit back and think about it to we need to actually put some of these measures into place and start doing. And then we can save our industry, honestly. And we can make it not only just save it, but make it a desirable place for people to want to work. Because long-term care, you know, you are gifted to get to be part of someone's journey, oftentimes to the end of their life. And very few people get to say they have that blessing, honestly. It's a joy to be able to be part of someone's life. And healthcare gifts you that.
Thank you for saying that. I mean, that is such a touching point. And, you know, over my career, I've been in conversations about curriculum around senior living within academic programs. And some of the conversation or pushback has been, well, students aren't going to be interested in that. Students won't care. That won't be interesting to students. They won't care about that. Mm-hmm. Which I didn't buy into that because I feel that, you know, our youth are, yeah, as we spoke earlier, they're amazing. They're amazing.
They are amazing.
They're so amazing. Accepting and so amazing. Yes. And just, and so to think that, you know, they wouldn't want to be around senior citizens. So tell us a little bit about what is it like to be around senior citizens? Because I can tell you, I completely enjoy it. And when I was a department chair and we would have some college events, my all-time favorite event was the faculty and staff alumni event that we had. It was with all the retired faculty within the college. I would stay
for
the whole event to the very end. It was my absolute favorite event. And I just feel like so much of society is missing out on these amazing people that, you know, well, you get over a certain age. I mean, luckily now that even that is kind of pushing forward that age a little bit, you know, because I think I'm in that age range or something. But, you know,
you have a long ways to go. Don't worry, for one. Long ways to go. Whether you think it or not, you do. Honestly, I still stick by this to this day. I prefer to be around 80 plus year old people than I do people in my 30s, like my own age. The stories that they can tell you, the life scenarios they can give you, the advice they can give, they've been there, done that. And we are one of the only cultures here in the Western side that doesn't really take a look at how amazing our seniors are. You know, if you look at the Asian cultures, or even, you know, some of the, I had some CNAs that were from Africa, they wouldn't tell their loved ones where they worked because, you know, back home, they didn't stick people in nursing homes. You know, the loved one lives with them from beginning to end. And so they were almost ashamed to tell people what their profession was here in the U.S. because, you know, you kind of, this mindset here is, well, now you reach past a certain age, you're no longer of use to us. And that could not be further from the truth. And we are not tapping into a vital resource for our society. And I would love to figure out how to set up a program with my students and getting to just visit with some senior citizens, because their mind, I can tell you after 30 minutes, their mind would be blown and they may have found a new best friend. I mean, we have a serious isolationist problem with our senior citizen population, and we could solve it single-handedly by pairing people together just by basic conversation. Because our younger generations have so much that can be learned from seniors, and they're witty and they're full of life, and their life is far from done, far from done. I have people on hospice that were funnier and were maybe within 6 weeks of their life ending than I've met in people that are in their 20s. I'd rather hang out with the hospice resident than I would someone who was in my 20s, because they're just full of life. And we're missing out big time on that. And so that's why I love senior living, because we think we have all these preconceived notions of what it is. And we don't do the industry justice. We don't do it justice. And you live with a senior citizen, so you understand the beauty of what it really can be. And don't get me wrong, it has its moments, but there are way more positive moments than there are not. And honestly, so I just watched a program last week of a psychiatrist living in Africa. He created a program, and I think he just wrote a book. It's called The Friendship Bench. And he noticed that mental health was a huge crisis in Africa, just as it is everywhere. But of course, there's a shortage of providers there. So he trained grandmothers how to sit on a bench and actively and compassionately listen to people. And suicide rates have gone down. You know, people's isolationists, and it's young people going to talk to them. It's not elderly talking with elderly, but we have decided that we undervalue senior citizens, and they have an infinite amount of wisdom and life to share with us. Infinite. And we don't tap into it well.
Oh,
so that's my two cents on the elderly population. And when I go to even my husband, he'll laugh because he's like, can we go anywhere without you finding the older person to talk to? I'm like, no, I can't. I am intrinsically drawn to them. Every fiber of my being, I have to be part of them, because you can leave a 3-minute conversation a better person after having talked with them, honestly.
Oh. I so agree. I so agree. And I would just put it out there that I think one thing that people could do is, you know, we've talked a lot about the listening part in this conversation. Well, senior citizens, talk to them. I can't tell you how many times I've been out with my mother, whose hearing is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
She's 81, but she can hear everything, even though she blasts her music late at night.
That's just how she's feeling for the night.
Yes, that's just how she's feeling about it. She's not blasting it. She can't hear, because sometimes I will have the TV turned down. And I'm like, can you hear that? She's like, oh, yeah, just fine. But what I notice is that people, we're out together, they'll address me. They'll ask me the question about
100%.
What did she want? What did, you know, does she want to order?
Mm-hmm.
And I never answer.
Good for you.
I will not answer. I'm like, you can ask her.
Yes. You have hit on something so vital, and this happens so often in healthcare too. We will talk to the family members about the person sitting right in that chair that can answer their own questions. And we have decided that as a culture, we're going to discount people's credibility for their own decisions on their life. And that happens so frequently. And I'm happy that you have been, I'm not happy, but I'm happy you've noticed how frequently it happens, as if they're incapacitated and cannot answer for themselves. They still have just as much autonomy, if probably not more, than some younger people. Let's be honest.
Sometimes less filters. Sometimes less filters.
Say it like it is. Yeah. Honestly, there's a beauty to it. They just say it. There's no fakeness.
Yeah.
So, that's what
I would encourage our audience. Please just talk to someone that's over, I'm not 60 yet, but I'm pushing it. You know, over 60, talk to them.
Honestly, yes.
Any senior citizen.
Yes. I try to urge as many people as possible, if they still have their grandparents around too, to please pick up the phone and talk to them, because they're such an integral part of people's lives. And that's such a quick and effective way to start to interact with, you know, the elderly population. And so many people just have decided, even that their own family members, they can't converse with because there's such maybe an age gap or a demographic difference. But it's not the case at all. It can be so beneficial and therapeutic for both parties. So beneficial.
I so agree. Well, thank you for, I think every episode I get up on a soapbox somewhere and
I think I
grab the guests and I, you know, drag them up there with me. So thank you for getting on the soapbox with me. And
thank you for letting me on the soapbox with you.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be, you need to be like a soap platform or something eventually.
Agreed. I'm happy to just be part of it.
Well, Melinda, you have such a fascinating career, and I'm definitely going to have you back to talk about.
I would love to.
Well, I mean, you've made such, you're an entrepreneur, you're a professor, you're a practitioner. I mean, you're a mother and a wife. I mean, you just have all of these things that you're doing, and it's just fascinating. And
thank you.
And you're so well branded, you know. So we talk about branding a lot, innovation insights, and audience, please go check out her website too. It is so on point. It's
Thank
this
you.
Fabulous.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. And if any of my background is hopefully reminiscent of what innovation means, if you have an idea or an interest, just follow and pursue it. It can be fun. Whether it is a monetary gain or not, I think we owe it to ourselves to dive in deeper into what it is that we want to do with our life, no matter whether they have parallels or not, because my career looks like it's taken all sorts of turns, but I've had a very interesting career so far, and I enjoy not knowing what's next. It's fun. It keeps things interesting, and that's the innovator in me, I think.
Well, that leads to my last question that I always ask if you want. How do you define innovation?
I think innovation is about following that child instinct that we have within ourselves. I can't think of a better way. I mean, if you look back to, you know, when you were 7, 8, 9 years old before life, you know, all those external forces forced you to grow up, all those bills and mortgages and, you know, having your own children, whatever may be the case, you know, who are you at the core of who you are when you were a kid? And that's oftentimes who, those are the directions you should follow. Because as an innovator, that's who you are. It's your basic level, and you don't have to restrict yourself to this one little box. Like, I liked healthcare, but I also liked academia. I also like writing books. Like, you can be many different people. And being an innovator is that. You can have all these different interests and, you know, personas and business ventures. And it really kind of ties back. Everything that I am interested in has tied back to who I was as a kid. So I think, you know, being an innovator is taking it back to the real OG here. Who you are when you were little, and we owe it to ourselves to do something with that. Honestly, we do.
Oh, I love that. Thank you. Thank you. And that, you know, we have programming that we're working on and products and services for our little innovators too.
Oh, great.
And so, yeah, you know, if, you know, if we could carve out another 24 hours in a day, we'd have them out. But they have been in the works. And so there's some things coming forward. But I'm so glad that you talked about, you know, that child. Just thank you for being here. I mean, we have covered the whole lifespan.
From beginning to end, yeah. We have.
So just thank you again for being here and for all of your work in long-term care and practicing and teaching and mentoring people on listening and being compassionate and having empathy. Those are such great values for our society. So thank you.
I agree. Thank you for having me. This has been a treat.
Well, this has been fun. So to our listeners, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Innovation Insights. And I truly hope that today's conversation has given you a deeper understanding of the complexities and opportunities in long-term care. We have, you know, generations of citizens in our world that have such value. So please embrace them. Get to know someone. Talk to a senior citizen this week.
Get out there and talk to them. They deserve it.
Yeah,
you deserve it.
Make it a goal. Talk to them.
Yes.
And then, you know, please follow us on social media, subscribe to our podcast, and join us for more inspiring stories from leaders such as Melinda. So until next time, keep innovating, keep dreaming, and keep making a difference.